Hi there, my name is Njerim Bogwa and I'm the host of Crime and Consequence KE, a true crime podcast where we tell the life stories of our victims, who they were, what happened to them, and why they still matter. I'm going to start with a trigger warning. This episode includes references to the death of a minor and harm to children. Listener discretion is advised. Our plays this week are Lekupuri Leyagu, the victim, Loitiptip Ntilipa Linasotu, our second victim, and Sospita Lomongo Loriu, the accused. And this story takes place on the 27th of August, 2017, in a place called Rumuruti Township, Laikipia West Sub-County, within Laikipia County. The accused person in this case was a military officer and he was a member of 20 Parachute Battalion that was based in Gilgil. It was a Sunday morning in August 2017 when a group of soldiers arrived at Rumuruti. The soldiers were based in Muruak Camp, Laikipia West, and they had been sent to Rumuruti, it seems, to fetch water. That seemed to be their primary mission, if I can call it that. So when they get to Rumuruti, some of them go on the actual errand and fetch some water, and then some of them decide to go on their own personal errands. One of the soldiers who decided to go on a personal errand was identified as Private Obonyo Calvin Zokul, and he testified that at the time of the incident, he was getting money from an M-Pesa shop when suddenly he had gunshots. His first thought was that they were under attack, and so he decided to go investigate and see if he can help out any of his soldiers. So as he's headed towards the direction of the gunshots, he meets Sospita, who's headed towards his direction. Okul states that he asks Sospita what the problem was. I've had gunshots. Is everything okay? Are we under attack? And he states that at the time when he's trying to get information from Sospita was, he looked really uneasy. He wasn't really giving him any information. And after a while, Okul claims that Sospita told him that he had shot children. When Sospita states that he has shot children, Okul disarms him. He does a safety check on his gun, and then he decided to take Sospita to their section commander. So when they get to their section commander, they confirm that Sospita had actually shot children, and they went and found two children on the ground. One of the children was lying in his back, and he had a gunshot wound in the eye, and this was Lekupuri Leyagu, who was our first victim, and the other was injured on the hip, but he was breathing. And this is our second victim, who was Loitiptip Ntilipa Linasotu. So Lekupuri was 14 years old and Loitiptip was 15 years old at the time of this incident. So when the soldiers get to the crime scene, they find that Lekupuri is dead because he's been shot in the eye, but Loitiptip is still alive. The next person that was called onto the stand was Loitiptip Ntilipa Linasotu, who's he was 15 years old at the time of this incident, and he was the survivor of the two children. And he testified that he was in Rumuruti that Saturday with his uncle, who was our first victim, and both of them were visiting their grandmother at the time of the incident. So as they're just walking along town, he says that they see two men who are dressed in green and black, but they did not know the two men. As the children and the two men approach each other, he says that the two men started to harass him and his uncle. And before they shot the two of them, he says that he had one of the men say, "Bado wa samburu wa kuhapa." And then after he said that is when he just had gunshots being fired in their direction. And he saw that his uncle had fallen to his side and he had died, and he was injured in his leg. He says after they were shot, he fell and people came for him and took him to Nyahururu Hospital. One of the good Samaritans that helped him was identified as Benjamin Lekitasharana, and he testified that he had gunshots and people's voices that morning, and when he went to investigate what was happening, he saw a crowd of people and two military officers. He testifies that one of the officers was saying, "Wacha ni muue," and there was a young woman shouting, "Ameua." When he got closer to the scene, he saw two children lying down, but only one of them was alive. So the minute he noticed that nobody's really helping the kid that was still alive, he took him, and the first place that he took him to was to a chemist so that they could try and stop the bleeding. And then from there, they took him to Nyahururu Hospital, where he was treated for his wounds, and he fortunately survived. So when Benjamin was on the stand, he was able to identify the gun in one of the officers he saw at the scene. But he stated that he had not seen who actually shot the children. He just had the gunshots, had the commotion, and then went and saw that the kids had been shot by the time he got there. So on the stand, he verified that he could not say for sure that it was Peter that shot the children, because he did not see him shooting the children. And the same thing went for Private Oku. He could not be sure that it was Sos Peter who shot the children, because at the time of the shooting, he was not in the vicinity. Another KDF soldier identified as, I don't know if it stands for Corporal, I'm just going to assume it's Corporal, Corporal Isaac Lemale testified that on the day of the incident, he was with 9 other officers, including Okul and Sos Peter. He testified that after drawing water, he had a gunshot. After 5 minutes, Okul came back with Sos Peter, and Okul told them that Sos Peter had killed one person and injured another in the leg. After they went to the scene, they confirmed the incident had happened. The soldiers withdrew from Rumuruti and they went to the police station, where they waited for military police from Nanyuki to kind of come and take over, because the accused person was a member of the military. Isaac testified that Okul handed him Sos Peter's rifle, the rifle that was used in the shooting, and he removed the bullets before he ran to the crime scene. He said he handed over the rifle to the police in Rumuruti and that it had 20 rounds of ammunition, and the accused had used 7 because he had only found out 13 rounds when he did the check. He also recovered 7 cartridges at the scene that were taken by another officer. A cartridge is defined as a metal or cardboard tube containing a bullet and an explosive substance. If I'm not wrong, it's the thingy that when you shoot the gun, it's the thingy that drops down when the bullet is ejected. I think that's, I'm not sure. I could be wrong. The investigating officer was also called to the stand, and he was identified as James Koech. Oh, James Koech, that's the name of the victim in season 2, episode 1, and that's the highest performing episode so far. I really wonder who put people onto that episode, because it has a lot of listens. Anyway, I digress. James Koech was the investigating officer in this case, and he said that morning he was also in the township area in Rumuruti. He says that morning he had gunshots, and he was called by another officer who told him that someone had been shot near his shop, and he was instructed to follow up and see what was happening. So when he gets to the scene, he says he found the dead body of a young boy, and he did not find the other boy that had been shot, because at this time he had been taken to the hospital. He stated that KDF soldiers had conducted the scene, and when he got there, he examined the body and noted that a bullet entered via the deceased right eye and exited on the back of his head. He was informed that Sos Peter, who was a KDF soldier, had shot the boy and also another young boy who had been taken to the hospital. He stated, remember that when the second KDF soldier was called to the stand, he stated that Sos Peter must have used 7 bullets because he found 13 rounds in his gun. But the investigating officer states that when he went and did the crime scene check, whatever, he only found 6 used cartridges at the scene. So there was one that was missing. The prosecution called a few more witnesses, but all of them just kept on repeating the same thing. I was just in town. I had the gunshots. I went and looked. There were 2 KDF soldiers. There were 2 children that were shot. One of them was dead and the other one was taken to hospital. So that's just basically the whole gist of the incident of that morning. Now let's go to the defense. In his defense, Sos Peter gave an unsworn testimony. An unsworn testimony is a statement made in a court by a witness or an accused person who has not taken a legal oath or affirmation to tell the truth. If you remember in last week's episode, the accused person in that case, John Okinyo, he did a sworn testimony. That basically means that he took an oath in court and said that everything he was saying was the truth. And the difference between a sworn and an unsworn testimony is that the prosecution could cross-examine John, the accused person in last week's episode. But with an unsworn testimony, it's just basically the defendant getting a chance to say their side of the story, but they're not under oath. So they're just telling the court, you guys are accusing me of this, but this is what happened, according to me. Yeah. Sospita said that that morning he was given escort duties in Rumiruti where they were to go and draw water. There were 9 soldiers in total and Lieutenant Karaoke was the section commander in charge of that day. He said that they left base at 8 a.m. in full gear and rifles that had magazines with 100 rounds of ammunition. He said they were going for a security operation and were ready for any incident and his gun was cocked. This basically means that his gun was ready to fire. So they arrive at Rumiruti safely and they draw water. And then people also go on some personal errands. So he actually had gone on an errand with Calvin's Okul, who was one of the prosecution's witnesses. But remember, at the time of the incident, Okul said that he was at a shop withdrawing some money from an M-Pesa shop. So they had left the group together, but they had split somewhere. So he said that as they were patrolling the area outside the shop, his gun accidentally fired. He said that the machine gun that he had was automatic, and he messed the bolt on and the magazine fell from the gun. Now, I did not understand any of that. So I went and I asked ChatGPT to translate what that said. And basically it means that he said his gun could fire bullets by itself. That's what the machine gun was automatic means. But he made a mistake with the part that moves bullets, the bolt on. And because of that, the parts that holds the bullets, which is the magazine, fell off the gun. I hope that makes sense. He added that when the magazine fell, this is when he realized that stray bullets had hit innocent persons. Okul then took the gun from him and took him to his section commander, who questioned him. After that, he was taken to the police station and explained that it was an accident and he did not know the victims. That part of his explanation was a bit interesting for me because I did a bit of research because I really wanted to understand. And the question that I have right now, even before continuing the story, is if the magazine fell from the gun and the magazine is the thing that holds the bullets, if you messed up and that fell from the gun, then how did the gun also still like fire the shots at the people? Because if you're saying that the magazine thingy fell, then that means that there were no bullets to be fired, even if the thing was automatic. Or maybe did he mean that because it was automatic, he made a mistake and he accidentally fired the bullets and then the magazine fell? I didn't get it. It was a bit confusing to me, his explanation over there. Maybe somebody who knows about guns can come and tell me what it is that I'm missing from this explanation. Oh, also, so apart from if the magazine fell, then how did the gun fire? He also said that the bolt-on was messed up and that is when his magazine fell. And we said that the bolt-on is the part that moves the bullets, right? If the bolt-on is the part inside the gun that pushes a bullet from the magazine into the firing chamber and makes the gun ready to shoot, so if he also messed that up, then that pushes the bullet so that it goes into the firing chamber and then it's eventually fired, ejected from the gun. If that was messed up, that means that the whole process was not working. So again, how did you shoot 7 rounds if you didn't even have bullets in the gun? And even if you did have bullets, the part of the gun that starts the process of ejecting that bullet was messed up. So that's my whole question with his defense already. So taking the stand in his defense was his aunt, who was identified as Antonella Awanja-Lamongo. And she says that she had raised him since he was a very small child and he had been a perfect child of good character and he used to help at home and he was just a very good boy, basically, is what his aunt was saying. She stated that she had heard of the incident and then traveled to the military area in Gilgil and she found Sospita in a very, very bad state. She actually said wrong state. She says that he was crying, he was confused, he was talking to himself, and he was really begging for forgiveness because he was very remorseful about what he had done. She said that, yes, so he was begging for forgiveness because he felt really bad about what he had done. And when she saw the state that he was in, just how distressed he was, she had him taken to Marsabit Hospital. And then after Marsabit Hospital, she had him taken to Mathare Mental Hospital, which is a mental health facility in Kenya. So Sospeter undergoes two mental health assessments, and they do the first one, and I think the results are a bit inconclusive, so they do the second one. And when they do the second mental health assessment, they found that he was fit to stand trial. However, his family brought documents to court on 27th February 2019, this is about 2 years after this crime had happened, to show that Sospeter was actually still undergoing treatment at Mathare Teaching and Referral Hospital. The court then suspended his bond again and issued an order for him to be further assessed and a report from Mathare to be produced as evidence of treatment. Later, the court received the report, following which it suspended the bond again until the 25th of March 2020 and ordered that the accused be taken to Mathare Hospital until late 2021 when his mental health improved, though Sospeter is said to have been on medication for his mental health the whole time. So from 2017 all the way to now when they were making this decision, he was on medication. But what they did not do is tell us, like, what was his mental health condition? Was it depression? Was it anxiety? Was it PTSD? They were not saying what the mental health condition he was being treated for was. And also the court documents did not give enough information on what the mental health assessment said, or even the criteria that they use to kind of determine whether you're fit to stand trial or maybe you can go the insanity route. Yeah. So to further his defense, Sospeter tried to poke holes at the evidence presented by the prosecution. He said that they had failed to prove the gun used in the incidents was his because all the other KDF soldiers had the same type of rifle as him. He also said that 7 rounds were emitted from his gun, but only 6 were recovered at the scene. And this means that there must have been another officer with the same kind of gun who shot at least once. He said investigations were only carried out on his gun and not any other gun. And also what I found interesting in this case is the fact that multiple people said that they saw 2 KDF soldiers. It's 2 KDF soldiers who approached the boys. Multiple people said that. But throughout the whole story, it's only Sospeter who's put on trial. It's only Sospeter who was questioned. And it's like they did no mention of the other soldier, who he was, what his role was, you know, they just never identified him. It's kind of multiple people said there were 2 soldiers, but it's only Sospeter who went on trial. And so I was kind of trying to figure out that maybe Calvin's was the other soldier that Sospeter was with. And maybe they may have met the 2 children together, but Calvin's decided to let me just go withdraw money from the M-Pesa shop and then you just continue doing whatever you were doing. Or maybe there was never a second soul. I don't know, because even one of the kids that was shot, he said that there were 2 soldiers, but the prosecution it's only Sospeter that's targeted. And it made me wonder, who was this other one? Because they don't mention him, they don't bring him up. Even after the witnesses mentioned that there were 2, there's no questioning of who was this other one, what was he doing, was his gun checked to see if he had all his rounds intact. Like, it was a bit weird how there was a mention of 2 soldiers, but it was only 1 who was on trial and who was so keenly focused on. Let's go on. Where was I? What's the last thing I said? Defense also added that the bullet that is said to have killed the deceased was only one, which means there is a possibility it could have come from another gun. He also poked hole at the survivor's testimony, stating that he could not have been able to identify them because they were in full gear and had their faces covered. The defense also added that it was very convenient for the prosecution and the investigator that 1 cartridge could not be found at the scene. The defense said that it's common knowledge that the cartridge is emitted near the gun shooting. So if Okul is the one that, not Okul, if Sospeter is the one that had shot all the rounds that killed the kids, then they should have found 7 cartridges instead of 6. Ooh. I just remembered I dated somebody who used to sleep with his gun almost like not under his pillow, but like he alikuwa anaiweka hapo mahali kwa kichwa yake. That was an interesting relationship anyway. So in conclusion, he said that he's not guilty of murder because they cannot prove that the bullet that killed Lekupuri came from his gun. This case was heard before Judge C. Karaoke. The judge said the prosecution had been able to prove that a death had occurred and that it was unlawful, he said. On whether the prosecution proved beyond reasonable doubt that it was the accused who unlawfully killed the deceased, there was an eyewitness to the incident. Moreover, there was watertight circumstantial evidence linking the accused person to the offense. So the judge also noted that the court was cautious of the danger of relying on a single witness. However, the court was aware that even without corroboration, the trial court can convince an accused person as long as it's satisfied with the quality of the evidence of the single witness. He said, in a quote, "I find that the prosecution's fourth witness, who is Loitiptip, the surviving child, that the prosecution's fourth witness says evidence to have been honest, truthful, and credible. The attack happened during the day at around 10 a.m. Therefore, the conditions favored the correct identification of the accused as the attacker was present." The prosecution's fourth witness was also a victim of the attack, and it was only by sheer luck that he did not lose his life on that day. I believe that he was able to see the accused clearly because of the close-range shooting, and the witness stated that his face was not covered and thus was visible. In reference to the defense's case, the judge said, "Because of the defense by the accused person, I find that any minor contradictions and inconsistencies present in the prosecution's case did not in any way affect the strength of the evidence or displace the fact that the accused occasioned the unlawful act that led to the deceased murder. I would also like to point out that there was no evidence to prove that the accused person was insane when he committed the offense. His defense was untruthful and raised no doubts about who committed the heinous crime." So basically the judge was like, yes, I know that they're saying that 7 bullets were fired from your gun, but they only found 6 cartridges, but that really doesn't make me feel like you're not the one who committed this crime, because everything else, even if it's circumstantial, everything else points to you. And the one piece of, I guess, concrete evidence they had was that one of the kids survived and he could identify that, yes, the person that shot me was that one. Let's go to the sentencing. On March 19, 2024, the accused was back in court for sentencing. In his submissions on mitigation — and submissions on mitigation are formal presentations usually in court by a convicted person or their lawyer to persuade a judge to impose a lighter sentence by highlighting factors like remorse, good character, personal circumstances, cooperation, rehabilitation efforts, or unique reasons for the offense, balancing the prosecution's aggravating factors. So they're basically like, he did a bad thing, but that doesn't mean that he's a bad person, so please be lenient with him. In his submissions on mitigation, the defense wrote that at the time, Sospita was a young man who was barely 24 and he had been with the KDF for about a year. They said his supervisors should have known about his mental health instability and not sent him to a war zone with an automatic weapon he was not used to operating. The defense added that this was Sospita's first mission into a warring area, and therefore he had no experience on how to handle different situations. He said that his state of mind was clearly not right, and his partner, whom he was assigned to be his company in the town, abandoned him outside, and when his gun went off, he was all alone, struggling to bring it to control. In his defense, he noted that he never intended to harm anyone, and most importantly, he did not intend to kill anyone. He said that this is true because as a trained soldier, if he indeed intended to kill, then he would have aimed and he would have lethally. Is that how you say it? Lethal, lethally, lethal. Alright, he would have hit his target. So the defense also provided details about how Sospita, alongside other soldiers, were deployed to the Laikipia region, which was known to have bandits, and their mission was to fight dangerous armed bandits. And he stated that the commander tasked him alongside with other soldiers to guide a water vehicle to town and back, and all this time they were armed with automatic rifles, which they were instructed by their supervisor to cock throughout the journey and to be ready for any eventualities along the way. I hope I've not lost anyone. So this is basically, this in his submission, he was basically saying that he was a young person who had been deployed to a war zone, and he was very nervous and he was mentally unstable this whole time, and his supervisors knew but they didn't do anything. And even the person that he had been given that day to be with him had abandoned him, and when his gun went off by itself, he was confused, he didn't know what to do, and he found himself having killed one person even though that was not his intention. That is basically what all this is saying. He also said that when Okul came and found him, he found him in a state of shock and a state of panic, which means that he immediately regretted what had happened. He said that he did not resist when he was asked to surrender the gun, and he never resisted arrest, even his colleagues testified that he had been very remorseful from the onset of this incident. He also said that there must have been a misdiagnosis, because remember that the second mental health assessment that he was given concluded that he was fit to stand trial. He said that he was receiving mental health treatment from Mathare Hospital for about 15 months to stabilize his mental affliction. And throughout that time, he has been on medication to stabilize his mental illness. Again, they're not telling us what this mental illness. The defense said that even today, so the day they are producing these submissions, Sospita continues to receive medication for mental stabilization even while in remand. And the defense said that can be corroborated by prison authorities at the Nyahururu GK prison, as well as his medical records, including the proceedings of the court. So they also added that Sospita was very remorseful, and he had been remorseful from the beginning. His aunt testified in his defense that he even sought the family of the deceased immediately, intending to seek forgiveness, and he even sent elders from his community for this purpose, just to try and say that he was very sorry for what happened. He did not intend on it to happen, and he was feeling the consequences of his actions. So the defense says that this gesture is quite telling, that Sospita regretted the whole incident, and he has sought throughout the whole time, he has been trying to seek forgiveness. The defense also said that Sospita had been, up until the time of this incident, he had been a model citizen, and he did not have any previous criminal record. They said that his aunt also testified that he was, even from childhood, he had been a person of good character, and he had grown up in an area where there was extreme poverty, and they had gone through a lot of difficulties because it was in the interior of Marsabit, and which for decades has been ravaged by armed conflicts among the communities living there. And his aunt also testified that Sospita had grown up without a father because his father had been an AP officer who was killed in the line of duty by bandits. So he had grown, even if he had grown up in a poor family, the aunt had testified that he was always an obedient child who took up the responsibility of providing for the family and even taking up the responsibility of educating his younger siblings. So the defense added that the fact that Sospita grew up in a conflict zone but had the mental strength to wither all that and not engage himself in any criminal enterprises is commendable, and it means that he is a person who has avoided any incidences of criminality. They also submitted that the impact of the negative factors of growing up in a worrying region and the effect on the normal development of Sospita should not be overlooked. And in their pre-sentencing, they also say that the pre-sentencing report establishes that Sospita was a very disciplined officer before the incident. He was not a person who intended to throw his life away. They say that Sospita was a person focused on getting better every day and helping his family come out of poverty. The defense added that the incidents had been a turning point in Sospita's life, which had been otherwise normal, and apart from the fateful events of that day, he had been just a good person who was trying to live a good life. So the defense urged the court to be guided by the circumstances of the case, Sospita's background, his military history, and all other factors when they were going to be handing down his sentence. They also urged the court to consider the time that Sospita had been in remand custody on and off since he was arrested in 2017. So in the end, the defense pleaded for the court to be lenient when sentencing Sospita and consider everything that had happened to him, you know, losing his father, growing up poor, but still being a very good person who had not been involved in any other types of crime, and he was basically serving his country at the time of this incident. So after all the submissions were made, the judge went ahead and made his decision. Despite all this, Sospita was sentenced to 15 years in prison to be served with effect from the date of the ruling, which was just last year on March 19th, 2024. So should he serve his full sentence, Sospita will be out of prison in 2039 and he will be around 46 years old. And that is the very unfortunate story of Lekupuri Leyago and his nephew Loitiptip Ntilipa Linasotho. Thank you so much. If you've made it to the end of the episode, thank you for hanging out with me. I am tired. This case was very... I found this case last year. I remember coming across this case last year. And I held off on doing it last year because I was really, really, really trying to make sure that I've connected all the dots in a comprehensive, clear way. But every time I kept on starting the episode, I would get somewhere and get very confused. And I'm like, okay, I thought I understood it like this, but then it's now starting to sound like it's this other way and this other way. But I hope I've been able to give the story in a clear, cohesive way that does justice to both the victims in this case. I would like to hear your thoughts on this case. What do you think about how the prosecution and the defense handled the case? Do you agree with what they were saying? Do you think that Sospita is the actual person that killed Lekupuri in this case? Do you think it could have been another soldier? Were you as confused as I was sometimes when trying to understand really what happened? And yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. And don't forget to give me a 5-star rating if you're listening to this on Spotify, because I deserve it. Thank you very much. And don't forget to share with a friend. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell another friend. And also follow me everywhere. Follow me on TikTok, Crime and Cons KE. On Instagram, Crime and Cons KE. On Facebook, Crime and Consequence KE. On YouTube, Crime and Consequence KE. And you can listen to the podcast on Spotify, AfriPods, Apple Podcasts, and Castbox. Just key in Crime and Consequence KE by Njeri Mbogwa. This is going to be my 13th episode. I'm so proud of myself. And as I said, I will see you guys next week for real, for real, for real. Bye.